What's up, Warriors fans? I'm Dalton Johnson. That's Monty Poole once again, and this is another edition of Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. And Monty, you know what time it is. I got to make everyone hungry once again, so we got to do breakfast better and wake up to oven-baked bacon and savory sausage and a breakfast baconator. You need to start looking forward to tomorrow morning at participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours only. And Monty, I'm reporting live right now.
Can you smell the bacon cooking?
I can smell it. I can smell all the bees right now, the bacon, the Bob Myers, Boston. We can't escape it right now. But now, I'm surrounded by the two C's of California Classic, where you and I were the last 2 days. You were there for the first game, and you witnessed somebody that I think kind of took everyone a little bit maybe by surprise, or at least opened some eyes, in Gui Santos, the 20-year-old Brazilian second-round draft pick, I believe number 55 overall, by the Warriors. And he put up a pretty impressive stat line. So what did you see and what stood out most for that first game in the California Classic from the Warriors rookie, Gui Santos?
Well, I'll start with the bad. And because the only thing that was really bad is that he was turnover prone. You know, he had some ball control issues, ball security issues. And, you know, some of that is, I think, you know, he'd had two practices, you know, and he's playing with guys that he just met, you know, whose names he's still learning. So he's in a foreign country. He flew 6,000 miles to get here. So I think initially you got to give him some leash because, you know, he's in a very unusual situation. But aside from that, you could see that, you know, he's played professional ball now for 3 years. And you can see that he has some of that polish. I mean, he knows where he's going on the court. He can be a really good playmaker. His dribbling is okay. But his sense of where to be on the floor and what to do when he has the ball is good now with the potential to get better. That's something that Seth Cooper said they're working on, is just making quick decisions, you know. But right now, he can shoot a little bit. He can pass a little bit. He can help a G League team right now, I think. So the question is how soon he'll be in the NBA, because I definitely think he has NBA potential, which for a guy drafted 55th overall, that's pretty good. But he has something that tells me he can play at the NBA level. It's a matter of getting him some coaching, getting him accustomed to the NBA style of play, and letting him go from there. But he's got a knack for making good things happen on offense. Defensively, you know, didn't see much of that, but you know what? I didn't see much of that from anybody yesterday, so.
Exactly, and I think for me, from the outside, and then tonight, what impressed me from Santos is he seemed like a pretty quick decision maker, and as you said with, like, the bad, a lot of that was early on, where he was kind of trying to figure out his teammates, and he was turnover prone early on. He got kind of better as the game went on, but it seems like once the ball in his hands, he's not afraid to get downhill and get to the rack. So he does seem like someone, yeah, who has some offensive prowess for sure. The potential is clearly there. But for me, I was obviously here tonight to see Moses Moody. And it looked like literally his night was going to be cut short, not even 5 minutes into the game. Took an elbow to the eye, and he was bleeding pretty good from that left eye coming down. He had to receive 2 stitches. He came back in with about 8 minutes to go in the second quarter, and he started to get it going a little bit. Early on, it was clear that they wanted the ball in his hands and have him as more of a facilitator. You know, we talk about these summer league rosters, and he was surrounded by some good names, but at the same time, he's surrounded by 2 second-round draft picks, 2 undrafted players, and nobody with NBA, you know, background by any means. No one that's actually played in the NBA yet, and this is someone who was averaging 13 minutes a game in the Western Conference Finals, you know, so he's not used to this kind of chase center by any means. In the first half, he looked far and away like the best player on the court for sure. I think what stood out was, again, he's a pro's pro. We've talked about that for only being 20 years old. He made his first bucket, 11 seconds later takes a charge. So that's, I think, what really stands out to the Warriors right now, is that he's able to impact the game both ways. But then in the second half, he turned the ball over 4 times. He missed all 5 of his shots. So he ended up with 9 points, 5 turnovers. He was 3 for 11 from the field. So there was good, there was bad. And there's also just product of your environment. And I think that we have to remember that with Summer League, especially with this California Classic, we expect to see some bigger names in Las Vegas, hopefully. But I think when you look at the box score for any of these players, you're going to have to remember their surroundings. And just, you brought up with Gui Santos that he had two practices. So again, he's not playing, Moses Moody's not playing with Steph Curry, Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, anybody of those guys anymore. So that's just an adjustment period right now. But it did stand out to me that they clearly want the ball in his hands and want him to have to make decisions and be a facilitator, get guys in the right spot. So whether it be him or Jonathan Kuminga, how important do you think it is kind of just to get the ball in their hands and make them make decisions, even if it's guys that they're not used to right now?
Yeah, I think with Moses, you know, they want to use him somewhat like they've used Andre Iguodala in the past. You know, a guy who can facilitate, you know, a wing, but yet one who can handle the ball, can take up some point guard minutes, play point forward, so to speak, can do some things on defense that helps the team. So, yeah, I can see that's the goal here now, is just getting him comfortable making decisions, because he has a high IQ and he feels the game pretty well. In the case of Kuminga, that's totally different. You know, he's still learning the game, really. You can see it, you know. Yeah, he's got all the physical tools you want. I mean, he can jump out of the building. And, he, you know, his three-point shot is much better than I think people thought it would be. But he's still learning how to make decisions, what to do when he has the ball, when to do it. He's still learning how to play defense and not foul people. So he's just – Moses is more advanced than Jonathan is in terms of playing basketball at the NBA level without making major mistakes. Jonathan has to play through that stuff because his ability is special. So he has to learn how to play through that. I think in his case, you know, once they get to Vegas with him, I think you just want to see him play and play within the system. Because last year there were times when he kind of would kind of go off the reservation a little bit and play a little one-on-one when, you know, I don't think that's what they wanted from him. Not yet, at least. Maybe at some point, but not right now when you have, you know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. I mean, you got other guys out there that can do some things. And Jonathan occasionally would go, you know, and try and do it, get his own. And so Moses plays a different game. He's a much more conservative offensive player, takes what's given, shoots it, but doesn't shoot it crazy. He's probably the Warrior who least likely will take a bad shot. I mean, Steph and Klay have the license to take the occasional bad shot. But Moses, you know, if he takes a bad shot, I'd be surprised, because it's just not how he plays the game.
Yeah, you can kind of see that, as you said, Andre Iguodala-ish to his game, or at least kind of trying to speed that up a little bit with kind of having the ball in his hands, because he can slow the game down as far as he's really, really smart, as we talked about. So I think even though they have such different skill sets, as you've brought up, I really want to see the ball handling between Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga in the summer, to just kind of see how it gets tightened up. Because there were times tonight where you could see that when Moody would over dribble, he would almost get stuck. He tried to take someone in the post who he was bigger and stronger than, but he was dribble, 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 and he didn't really have anywhere else to go. We saw with Jonathan this year the same thing, where if he had more than a handful of dribbles, it probably spelled trouble, right? Yes. He's someone who needs to catch the ball on the run, throw it down, or catch and shoot, or use his size and get to the rack. Once he's trying to make too many decisions and let his mind overtake his physical ability right now, it's usually not great. So I really want to see the ball in their hands in the summer and just kind of see where they progress going forward. And somebody else that it sounds like is continuing to make good progress is James Wiseman. Seth Cooper, the Warriors California Classic coach, who is their G League coach, said that before the game, Wiseman played 5-on-5. Sounded like it was his first kind of full contact up and down the court, 5-on-5. So that shows that he still is on track to play in Las Vegas. I can't say if that's the start, the middle, or the end of the Warriors' tenure in Las Vegas. How much that's going to be, we'll see. But as far as progression and, you know, I guess ramp it up 2.0, that's where we're at right now with James Wiseman. It continues to be what sounds like a good health, and everything is, again, positive right now. And that's all we can really take from anything that we hear James Wise right now, and we're not going to know until we see him on the floor. So that's the latest right now. I'm the messenger, but until we actually see him on the court, that's all we can go off of. But somebody that we're not going to see with the Warriors on the court going forward is Gary Payton II, which we've obviously already talked about, but it sounds like there are some added grumblings to how everything went down from Gary's side, from inside the Warriors. So I know that you have some inside track there. How did everything pan out, maybe from Payton's perspective, or maybe just his, the people around him, for the negotiations, which led to him agreeing to terms with the Portland Trail Blazers instead of returning to the Warriors?
Well, I mean, even the night before, as they were trying, as the Blazers made their offer, Gary's people were hoping the Warriors would come and be competitive with that offer, because Gary really wanted to stay with the Warriors. I mean, they found him, they gave him a chance, he shined, and they won a championship. And, you know, Bob Myers talked just a few days earlier about wanting to run it back, you know, keep as many of those guys as possible. And Gary was, you know, to my knowledge, Gary was the number two priority after Kevon Looney. And so, yeah, I think there was some disappointment on the Gary Payton side. And I think with the teammates, that there were some teammates that wanted to see Gary back. Gary is immensely popular. And he's also that rare guy who can, like we said the other day, he can come into the game and make a game-changing play on defense almost immediately. You know, you have these guys that come in and give you instant offense. He's instant defense. And in the Western Conference, where you see Chris Paul and Ja Morant, you know, Luka Doncic, you see all these ball handlers that are crafty and smart. You want to have someone who can play on-ball defense against these guys, because those are the guys that try and control the game. And so with Gary leaving, yeah, if you're Draymond, if you're Steph, if you're Clay, you're like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because Gary he's unique. And there's not, you can point to something. Avery Bradley is available, but he's not going to give you what Gary gives you. And he, like I said, Gary is so beloved in that locker room that it's just hard to see him go. I think, you know, everybody has to swallow hard, because on the inside, yeah, they're feeling this. But on the outside, though, they know Gary had to take this. They know that, you know, the Warriors coming at him with, you know, taxpayer mid-level wasn't going to compete with, you know, something $9, $10 million a year, you know, 6.5 versus 9 to 10. If you're Gary, you got to take that. You've had a long, hard road to get here. You G-leagued it, and you've been waived and cut and waived and cut and waived and cut. And now somebody's going to throw at least $28 million at you. You got to take that, even if, you know, even if Portland is your second choice, you got to take that. And he did. So there's disappointment on both sides. But I think it's one of those things that in the end, everybody will get over it. Everybody will play through it, because there's professionals both ways. But it's going to be interesting when the Blazers come to Chase Center. Just to see, to, you know, when Gary would get his ring and all of that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
That'll be really interesting. And another person who is not going to be back with the Warriors, who was here tonight, was Juan Toscano-Anderson. The Warriors' summer league team, the California Classic team, was playing against the Lakers' California Classic team, which is JTA's new home. He was wearing a white Kobe jersey, sitting courtside, actually sitting next to Warriors assistant coach Kenny Atkinson. So we've said it countless times, what a Bay Area legend Juan's going to be. But I just go back to losing Juan, losing Gary. We know that they've lost Otto Porter Jr. They've lost Damian Lee. They've lost Nemanja Bjelica. So that's a handful of role players from a championship team. But I think about kind of the heart, the soul of a championship team, a championship roster. How much was lost from that with those guys going out the door? And how much can that affect, I guess, going forward when you do have these two timelines converging, trying to win another championship this as early as next season?
Yeah, you know, and Steve Kerr, we talked about this occasionally during the regular season, is that, you know, he likes having guys on the team who scrap. You know, guys like Juan, guys like Gary, guys like Damian, because they didn't get to the league easily. You know, they had to fight their way into the league. They didn't get to the league until they were deep in their 20s, you know. And so they weren't coming in as first-round draft picks, lottery picks, anything like that. They were coming in just hoping to get a job. And so those guys always bring it. And there's a certain grounding that those guys have for the other guys. Because they, you can, if you're Steph Curry, you can cross the locker room and you see Juan or you see Gary or you see D-Lee, and you know that their ride is different from your ride. And you know that to have them around, it speaks to the blend of this team. So yeah, I think, you know, the Warriors had, obviously they had the experienced championship guys. They had the new guys coming in, the new vets coming in like Otto and Belly. They had the youngsters like Moody and Kuminga and Wiseman, but they also had the other guys who were just hardcore dog players that come to play and know that nothing is going to be given to them because nothing ever has been. And that's D-Lee, that's Juan, and that's Gary. And that element, you know, it's important to a team, I think. And next season, I'm not sure where it's going to come from.
Yeah, and another guy who is, you know, leaving the organization, who brought all the energy in the world as a player, brought all the energy in the world as a player mentor coach on Steve Kerr's staff. He's going to go along with Mike Brown, not too long of a trip, but he's going to go to Sacramento, and that's Leandro Barbosa. He's going to be an assistant on Mike Brown's staff with the Sacramento Kings, and he's another one that I just kind of think about the heart and soul of a team and what he means for these young guys. You look at before games, and he would be guarding a Moses Moody, a Jonathan Kuminga, and then also he'd be guarding Steph Curry before a game. So I think my real question is, is Leandro Barbosa the most interesting man in the NBA right now? I mean, he can still probably play, and he's still putting up game-winning shots in the big three. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. No, LB is a special dude, man. I like him a lot. And when he came back, I was like, okay, this is a good thing for the Warriors because he's just good people, a good spirit. Like you said, he brings the energy, but he connects with people. And I can see why Mike wants him. I can really see that. And I'm sure it wasn't an easy call for him, but it's a promotion. So you take that. And Guy Santos, you know, who was sort of, you know, you could say LB's discovery almost, you know, when he found out that Leandro was leaving, he was disappointed, you know, and he said, well, wonder, was he doesn't like me now or what, you know? So, but, you know, and I think it's going to hurt him a little bit because having Barbosa around for a guy like Guy Santos, again, we don't even know if Guy is going to be with the Warriors this season. That's to be determined. But I think there was a comfort level for him just having Barbosa around. But Barbosa could go to anybody from Bob Myers down to Gary, to anybody in that locker room, training staff, coaching staff, developmental staff. He can go to all those people and get things done, get things said, and also put people at ease. So it's just good to have somebody in the room that can do those things. And so he will be missed. Just his spirit is going to be missed, man. So again, you know, Steve has some decisions to make with his coaching staff. Got to replace Mike Brown. He's got decisions to make with the developmental staff. Got to place LB now. You know, Sean Livingston probably could do it, but he doesn't want to do it. You know, he doesn't want to be a coach full time. I know we talked about that. No, he doesn't want to do that. And neither does Andre. You know, he doesn't want to be a coach full time. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets hired. Last year, they brought in Kenny Atkinson, and they spoke with at least two other coaches that I know of about that position, and they ended up settling on Kenny. And I think they're happy because, again, you just won a championship. So you can't be disappointed with the changes you made last summer when you won a championship coming off of that. So, but it's going to be an interesting summer for the roster, yes, but more so for the staffs because the Warriors have invested a lot of money into their player development. And so, which, you know, brings us to another issue, and that is the chatter about possibly a Kevin Durant reunion with the Warriors. Come on now.
Yeah. Give me that right now, because when we do think about the package that the Warriors can offer, when you look at the other teams about what they can bring, whether it be picks, pick swaps, players. Yes, the Warriors, when you talk about the young talent, whether it be a Kuminga, a Moody, a Jordan Poole, the picks, all these things that would sound very, very intriguing to the Brooklyn Nets. Yeah, on a whiteboard, you better make sure you have a good eraser, but on a whiteboard, it all makes sense. Don't get me wrong. But in reality, it differs a little bit. So run me through, I guess, just the is the insanity, is that the right word for it? The craziness of a Kevin Durant reunion. Let's go, a possibility of a hypothetical. I want to emphasize these kind of words.
Yes.
Reunion, yes, with Kevin Durant here in the Bay Area.
Well, first of all, understand Kevin Durant is a top 25 all-time player. I mean, you can go out through the history, the 75 years of the NBA, 76 years of the NBA. He is a top 25 player. He can get you buckets. He can block shots. He's a smart player. He can play make for others. He get the full package. But he is 33, I think, 34. I mean, 34 this year in September. Steph is 34. Klay is 32. Draymond is 32. If you package up all your young talent, which is what it's going to take to get Kevin Durant, and you bring Kevin in, you've got a dynamite starting five. You know, you can put Kevin out there with Loon and Draymond and Steph and Klay and go, let's roll. But what are you going to do then? What are you going to do when you go to your bench? What is your bench going to look like? Well, think about this. What did the Warriors do last summer when people were crying? We got to get Steph some help. His window's going to close. You got to maximize his gifts right now because, you know, he only has another couple of years to go. They got to get a big name. Get Bradley Beal. Get Giannis. Get. Hold on. The Warriors say, no. We're going to go the other way. We are going to invest our money into developing young players. We got two lottery picks coming up. We just had one in James Wiseman. We got two more. We don't know when we'll have lottery picks again. We were lucky to have three lottery picks coming to us in a two-year span. Back-to-back drafts. So they thought, let's maximize that. Those three picks can be our future. Throw Jordan Poole in there. Andrew Wiggins as a bridge guy. 5 years from now, Steph is going to be 39. Klay and Draymond, 37. KD, 38. You don't really look at this and say, well, let's do it. What are you gaining? Because the Warriors, then what are your player development people going to do then? You brought them in. You brought Deke in to coach Wiseman and Looney. You brought Jama in to work with the youngsters, Kuminga and Moody and GP. So you bring in Kevin Durant, you lose GP already, and you move. Okay, Kuminga's gone, Wiggins is gone, Jordan Poole is gone, Wiseman's gone. Like, what are you doing? What are you going to look like in 5 years? So, no, that's why the thought of it shouldn't even be tempting, because it would take an entire U-turn of their philosophy. Their philosophy has been, we want to extend this as long as we can. We want to be good for a long time. And if you were to do that, you'd be good next year, maybe. Great next year. But after that, diminishing returns, because you won't be seeing any lottery picks anytime soon. And your chance to reload, who knows when that might be. So, no, it's not going to happen for a variety of reasons. But that's number one, is that they've already made that spin. They made that turn. We're going to try and invest in our future. They bring in coaching staff. They bring in development guys. We want to be able to get better with the guys we have, the homegrown talent. And that makes perfect sense at this stage.
Win a Ford F-150 at Drayton Resort and Casino. One truck winner and $50,000 in cash each Friday. Drawings on the last Friday of the month. Win a new truck with Drayton Resort and Casino's big Ford truck giveaway.
You look at the Warriors starting five right now of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, and we know that that's a championship five right there. But what separates the Warriors to me right now is if you look at the Warriors' top 10, then you look at a second unit possibly of Jordan Poole, Dante DiVincenzo, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, and James Wiseman. And now you're talking about a full-on squad. If all goes right, health-wise, development-wise, and that's where the two timelines continue to merge into one. And one of those guys who's a key new player is someone that we haven't brought up yet. We've talked about a lot about the guys who are on their way. One crazy hypothetical and a name that I think really stands out is Dante DiVincenzo, because to still be able to get him on the market with guys like GP2 gone, Otto Porter Jr. gone, it was a win-win situation for both sides. That's how I first viewed it. This is a former first-round talent, someone who is coming off of an injury, so he was slowed a little bit last year. But when he was traded to the Kings, he kind of showed what he can do as a two-way player, where he can provide you some offense and shoot the three-pointer pretty well. But he averaged 1.5 steals per game with the Kings in 25 contests. A really, really good athlete at 6'4". So does he fill the GP2 role? It's not the exact same skill set. I'm going to bring that right away, where we know how unique Gary is. There's no peer, you know, replacement. But to be able to get him on a two-year deal, the player option, a motivated former first-round talent, like I was saying, with Dante DiVincenzo, how much does that make up for the loss on the court of Gary being gone?
Yeah, he'll give him some of that. You know, he's a better offensive player than Gary is. And Dante's a good defensive player, but, you know, again, Gary is a defensive game changer. Dante's not in that category. That's a small group of people in the NBA that you can say that about. And so he's not going to do that. But this, again, you know, it's the Warriors are paying their developmental staff to get the most out of the young players on this team. And Dante's still a young player. You know, he's been around for a few years, but he's not 30 anything. So, you know, you want to, your staff that you have there, just like, I mean, I talked to Jama Malalela about this, and he said, in his first year with the Warriors, the thing he felt best about was the work that he did with Gary Payton II. You know, and just how he was able, they were able to bond and work on stuff, and just the way he can tighten Gary's game. And, you know, I'm not going to say that Jama got Gary paid, but Gary put it to work and put it into action and applied everything he learned. And you saw what happened. You know, he's getting key minutes in the finals. So I think, you know, Dante, you know, has been in the league a little bit, but he's going to be coached. So what can they do to maximize his abilities? Because he does have some skills. So yeah, he'll fill some of that, but, and he'll give them a little bit more offense than Gary will, which is, you know, you can always have another shooter on your team. And you know, so in that regard, he can give them some of what maybe they lose with Damian Lee going to Phoenix. So, and Damian didn't have a great shooting year, but Damian's number one skill is shooting. And he didn't shoot well this past year like he did 2 years ago. So Dante can fill some of that. So I think he's sort of a hybrid between what you got from Gary and what you got from Damian.
The selling point is what really kind of interested me too, again, with Dante, is that you just talked about Jama. And Jama, he coached Gary in the G League. He was part of his development here with the Warriors. And they can go Vincenzo and say, here's a two-year deal. You have a player option for the second year. We know that you have talent, that you, an athlete like you, probably shouldn't still be on the board at this point in the open market. But look at what we've done for Gary Payton II. Look at what we've done for Otto Porter Jr. The list goes, you know, on and on as far as you come here, you get in our system, you're going to win. You're going to be surrounded around development and also around winning and leadership, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. So I just think that that's what kind of separates them right now, is that you can say, why wouldn't you come here? We have everything that you need right now as someone who wants to be able to go back into the free agent market and say, hey, I want to get a three-year, $28 million deal like Gary Payton II did after grinding through the G League. So that to me is just kind of, again, what separates the Warriors from the other teams right now in the open market, is that they can go out and say, why wouldn't you want to come to the Bay Area right now and increase your value, increase your market, and maybe in the meantime, maybe win a championship as well. It doesn't hurt.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. So, hey, we talked about who's going out, who's coming in, a little bit of the future, a few updates, a wild Twitter conspiracy, throw it out there, hypothetical. I think we hit all of our bases. So, once again, I'm Dalton. That's Monty. This was Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. Rate, subscribe, review, and we will be back soon, no doubt about it.